Welcome to EAN Cast, your weekly source for education, research, and updates from the European Academy of Neurology.
Hello and welcome to the EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. My name is Bernhard Steinhoff and I'm the medical director of the Cork Epilepsy Center in Germany and currently serve as the co-chair of the scientific panel Epilepsy of the European Academy. This month's topic is epilepsy, news on the risk of malformations and developmental impairment among the offspring of female and male patients under anti-seizure medication. In episode 3, we covered females already. So in today's episode number 4, we will talk about the risk of offspring of male patients under anti-seizure medication, a topic that got hot during the last years, and we want to clarify some things for the neurological community during our episode of today. The learning objections are to be informed about the very recent and important data concerning the connection between certain anti-seizure medication and the risk of malformations and neurocognitive impairment, including autism spectrum disorders among the offspring of male patients under certain anti-seizure medications. And one of the best experts to cover this topic is certainly Jakob Christensen from Denmark. And hello, Jakob.
Hello.
It's a great pleasure to have you because you're one of the major authors doing this very important recent work about the risk of the offspring of male patients under anti-seizure medication. And coming back some 1 or 2 years, we were all shocked by this warning of the EMA concerning male patients and the risk of their offspring for certain disorders. Can you just summarize the quality of the data that had an impact of this very, very strict EMA warning and so the history behind?
Yeah, so it's been a long known concern, or at least for several years, that valproate exposure in pregnancy to females was associated with risk for the offspring. That was both for congenital malformations and neurodevelopmental disorder. So that raised the question on whether exposure in males during formation of the sperm cells, that is usually the time intervals, the 3 months leading up to the pregnancy, was also associated with an increased risk of congenital malformations and neurodevelopmental outcomes in the offspring. So what the EMA did was they asked the companies producing valproate to perform studies to assess this. And the companies merged data from 3 Nordic countries, Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, and performed a study where they looked at those males who filled prescriptions for valproate prior to pregnancy and compared the risk in the offspring of these males with the offsprings of males who used lamotrigine or levetiracetam during pregnancy. And what they found was that they found an increased risk, not of congenital malformations, that was the exposure to valproate was not associated with increased risk of malformation, but they found increased risk of neurodevelopmental disorders. About the increased risk was 50%, but in absolute terms, that means that if the father used valproate prior to pregnancy, the risk was around 5%. And if the father used lamotrigine or levetiracetam, the risk was 3%. So a difference of 2% in absolute terms. That led the EMA to impose this warning on exposure to males prior to pregnancy. And although they recognized that this evidence was limited, then they regardless, they came out with this relatively strong warning to for all doctors and all patients to reconsider whether treatment with valproate was really indicated. On top of that, the UK health authorities has assessed the same evidence, and on top of the concerns about the neurodevelopment in offspring of fathers who used valproate prior to pregnancy, then they were concerned about fertility in males. So there has been animal studies and also human studies indicating that exposure to valproate may be associated with lower sperm count and thus a decreased fertility. So in the UK, the restrictions are even stronger than those in the EMA warning.
And I'm so happy and so glad that you did this wonderful work, you and others published recently. And I think it was in JAMA Neurology, right? With this big registry study you did concerning this topic. And it would be wonderful if you could tell me about your results of this very important work.
Thank you very much. It was in JAMA Network Open, so almost,
yeah, right.
Almost as good. But anyways, so we were puzzled about the findings from the EMA study. So we couldn't really understand why exposure to males would be associated with an increased risk in the offspring. And at least this relatively strong effect that they showed of a 50% increased risk. So we tried to replicate. We had access to the data from Denmark. So basically similar to the data that EMA had access to, or at least the company who performed the study on EMA's request. And we were unable to, although we tried to align our studies with the study by EMA, so using the same data set, the same variables, the same methods of adjustments, we were unable to replicate the findings. So we thought that it was important to publish that we were unable to replicate. And I know that there are several other groups that are trying to do the same with other data sets to see if they can assess the risk in the offspring. Previous studies from Sweden, not particularly focusing on valproate, but looking at anti-seizure medications in general, neither they could find an increased risk associated with paternal exposure to anti-seizure medication. So I think we are in a position now where there's a very strong warning against the use of valproate in males. And then on the other hand, we have studies that are conflicting. And what we urgently need is for EMA and the companies behind the report from EMA actually published what they exactly did in these studies so we can fully understand why we see these differences. So we on one hand we have our study showing no association, and then we have this study from EMA or from the companies showing that there is a 50% increased risk. But I think it's fair to say that as opposed to the exposure in females, then there's none of the studies suggest an increased risk of congenital malformation. So it's restricted to those to a potential risk of neurodevelopmental disorders.
And did the EMA respond to your publication?
We had preliminary results when they were considering to publish the warning, and we submitted our preliminary results to them. And they considered the findings, but they felt that our study had several weaknesses, and that because of the weaknesses in our study, they would not change the plan of putting out the warning.
But if I take it correctly, the data the EMA is the EMA warning is related to are still not published. Is that right?
Yeah. So they published a report online that describes the the methodology, but it's not peer reviewed, so it's not yet been submitted for publication in peer review. So we lack specific details on how exactly things were adjusted. So the thing is that they, in the analysis where they find a 50% increased risk, unadjusted estimate, the risk was not increased. So it's only in the adjusted estimate that they found this 50% increased risk. And of course, then it's very important to understand what was actually included in that adjustment. And that is not possible to fully tell from the report. We tried as best we could to align with several sensitivity analysis to address some of the sensitivity analysis that they might have done, but still we are unable to find the same increased risk as found in the study reported by EMA.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation. And well, by the way, is it possible in your opinion? Because some, to my best knowledge, some pharmaceutical companies were responsible for the data collection. So is it possible that there might even be a conflict of interest?
This was done by an independent company, IQVIA.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that there would be any significant conflicts of interest. Also, I think it would be unlikely that a company actually selling a medication would try to find an association if it was not there.
Some competitors, you know, that's what I thought.
But I really think that they did their best. We not just need to understand what they actually included, so we can have a scientific discussion on whether their estimate or our estimate is the most accurate.
Well, to be honest, I believe your estimate, but that is my personal opinion. But some authorities like the EMA do not think about the practical consequences. Now, after this warning, we got a lot of referrals of male patients, seizure-free with generalized epilepsy, seizure-free for 20 years or so. And the physicians wanted us to switch those patients to other drugs because of this EMA warning, which is in my opinion, a good example what an impact such a warning can have on the general neurologists that are, of course, shocked by a warning like that. Have you similar experiences in Denmark?
Yeah. So the education material that was produced by the companies has just recently been released in Denmark. So we are now trying to disseminate this information to the patients. But we are discussing how to handle this because we cannot not tell the patients. So we need to, but we also, the information also need to be balanced so that the males really understand what could be the potential consequence of stopping valproate treatment. So I guess as physicians, we are very much concerned about the risks associated with stopping an efficacious treatment. Especially when we know that valproate is actually one of the most efficacious drugs, especially for generalized epilepsy, as you mentioned. So it's really going to be some difficult discussions with our patients. I mean, with our conflicting results, it doesn't make it easier because it would be much easier if the information was conclusive. Also, you would like information from other studies, similar to what we have in females, where you have information from cohort studies, from clinical studies, from animal studies that all point in the same direction. Here we have conflicting results, which makes it much more challenging.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much. So apparently the unmet needs are to get more and internationally driven data concerning this topic. But still, I think it is very important for the community of neurologists to listen to our episode of today, that you should have a look at the absolute figures, as you pointed out, very, very correctly, and that not... that even if this warning was correct, it does not necessarily mean that 100% of the male patients treated with valproate or other anti-seizure medications have this elevated risk. And this is sometimes a misunderstanding we have in my country, at least, because of the physicians' reactions. So, Jakob, again, I thank you so much, especially for your work, but also for this wonderful talk we had today. And I really hope that the audience benefits from our discussion of today for the practical use of anti-seizure medication in male patients. So thank you again very much, Jakob. That was wonderful.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This has been EAN Cast Weekly Neurology. Thank you for listening. Be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your preferred podcatcher for weekly updates from the European Academy of Neurology. You can also listen to this and all of our previous episodes on the EAN campus to gain points and become an EAN expert in any of our 29 neurological specialties. Simply become an EAN individual member to gain access. For more information, visit ean.org/membership. That's ean.org/membership. Thanks for listening. EANcast Weekly Neurology is your unbiased and independent source for educational and research-related neurological content. Although all content is provided by experts in their field, it should not be considered official medical advice.